Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com,
a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 90 for the week of December 26, 2011. I'm not Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
I'm just on Kim.
Well, actually, they're not here either. This is Patrick Perdue, and it looks like everybody's gone on vacation and left me out here all alone in the cold to produce a podcast. Well, not really. We do have some great interviews coming up that were conducted by Jamie Pauls, one with a food critic, someone who helped get an iOS app developed, and a college student. And then Lisa Salinger will be here to tell us all about Microsoft Security Essentials with System Access. So stay tuned for all this coming up now.
This week on the Serotalk Podcast, I'm visiting with Dan Aronoff, who is a blind food critic. And Dan, welcome to Serotalk.
Well, thank you, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be here.
I guess my first question is, how did you get into doing this kind of work? How does a food critic get started?
That's a really good question. What happened with me was that I started a blog about 3 or 4 years ago just as a way to communicate my feelings and to advocate for different issues around people with disabilities. You know, I remember going to different movie theaters that had the DVS, descriptive service, and then I would go and see the movie and there'd be no description at all.
Right.
I'd come back home, and I'd be so frustrated, so I put it on the blog directly. And then, I don't know, one day I did a restaurant review, and the blog's imported into Facebook. So all my Facebook friends started saying, wow, that's a great review. Keep on doing them. And I just sort of did. And, you know, last year I got my own website, the blindtastetest.net. And that's great. You know, it's not only is it the branding, but you don't have to, like, type in the long blog address, blogspot.com/whatever,
yeah.
You know, or wordpress.com/etc. And also, you know, I just think it's something that hasn't really been done before that much. I remember I was looking for someone to speak with about it, like maybe an expert who was already a blind food critic, and I kept looking for someone on Google, and I kept typing in blind food critic, and I couldn't find anybody at all.
Right.
And now apparently it's me, I guess. I don't know.
Well, there you go. So I had to start that, yeah.
It's great. I'm just really happy to be here.
Well, I will say that your writing style is very engaging. I find it quite easy to read. In fact, I mean, I was so engaged in reading that I was almost late mm-hmm. for doing this interview. So
right,
you know, that's
yeah.
kind of the best compliment I can give you, I guess.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm definitely a sarcastic person. I have my own brand of humor I try to incorporate into the writing. And you know, I like my foodie terms, but other than that, I don't want things to be too complicated for anybody at all, so
right.
That's basically how I write it.
Well, and just what little bit I reviewed, I mean, you appear to talk about foods that we are all familiar with. I mean, I'm sure you mm-hmm. get into some more exotic things. I saw a visit to an Asian restaurant, which I'm from
yeah.
the Midwest. I don't have a lot of exposure to that, but you do a little Thanksgiving discussion.
I do, yes. Yeah, I have a whole... not only a blog, but an audio post about my Thanksgiving experience this year, speaking of the Midwest, because I have aunt and uncle and a whole bunch of cousins out in Columbus, Ohio, and I go there every year for Thanksgiving. And this year, people were begging me to do a blog about the food Thanksgiving, and it's always great, so it wasn't like it was a problem for me at all. I knew it was going to be excellent to write, but I tried to spice it up a little bit because I chose to rank the foods, you know, so... if your food got the worst ranking, I'm sorry, I couldn't do anything about that, you know?
Right.
It's just what turned out. But, yeah, it's pretty much simple. I'm a very picky person, but I'm not so fancy. I don't go for the caviar and the foie gras and all the strange body parts of animals that, you know, I don't even want to look at.
Right.
So just basically, you know, your vegetables, your chicken, your fish, your beef. And if it's anything that's really over the top, I'll try to explain it, or I'll Google it first and tell you about what I found about it. Just trying to make things very usable for everyone.
Have you had much feedback from the blind community? I mean, it seems like dining is probably one of those things that, I mean, there are some mm-hmm. foods that are a little more manageable in public than others, maybe, and different people have
right.
different comfort levels. Has that discussion come up at all?
A little bit. It hasn't been a main focus for me so far.
Right.
I mean, I find the blind community, at least through Facebook and Twitter, they definitely embraced it. But the interesting part for me is that the people who are sighted, they seem to get the most out of it, or they seem to have the most wide range of feedback because, you know, either they don't know how we eat or they haven't seen a blind food critic before.
Right.
Or, you know, it's something in that nature. So I think that's been the most interesting for me.
That's very interesting. Where have you been? What have been some places that you've gone in your research, we'll call it?
In terms of the restaurants?
Yeah, or locations. Is it mostly, because you're on the East Coast, correct?
Yeah, right. I'm in New York City.
Okay.
I did one interview that was all the way upstate. And other than that, it's been basically everywhere in New York City. I have a few different obsessions, if you want to call it that. So hamburgers are one of my obsessions. And I've been going to many different places that make different kinds of burgers, from the very fancy places that want, you know, $20 for a burger.
Yeah.
To our local Shake Shack, where I love Shake Shack. It's a small chain out here.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a double burger for about $7. And it's definitely a filling meal for me. And I figure, hey, if I'm going to wait in line for an hour, I might as well get my worst some food out of it. So
absolutely.
Also Italian food. I love Italian food. But that's so much more tricky for me because a very common question is, hey, Dan, what's the best Italian restaurant in New York? I just never have a set answer for that.
No.
No.
Depends on what you're in the mood for at the time, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which neighborhood are you going to be in? How much money do you have to spend?
Right.
Is there a particular Italian dish that you like? But I've been to a bunch of those, too. And barbecue food also. Not that we have the best here, but we definitely have two or three really great barbecue restaurants that I go to a bunch.
And forgive me if you've already said this, but how long have you actually been doing the blog?
About 3 years.
Okay, so a little while then. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And you said that you just kind of transitioned into the food thing, right?
Yeah, I did. Like I said, in 2008 I was writing. I had an internship at an agency here in the city for people with disabilities, and they were asking me to do research on websites to see which ones were not accessible to the blind.
Uh-huh.
And I found one, I'm not going to name it, but it was not accessible to the blind, and there was a link saying create your own blog. And when I clicked on the link, the forum had one of those capture boxes, like, enter the words from the picture.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So I emailed the webmaster, and, you know, they were very, very nice to me, and we got things settled, so I ended up starting my own blog that summer. Not that it wasn't good reading. I'm sure, you know, for me it was interesting, and I'm a big Yankees fan, so I talked about that a lot, too. So, you know, Yankees and disability issues and whatever else was happening in my life. But definitely food came up sometimes, and then when I started writing reviews solely, then that was about it. That was, you know, once in a while I do have other things on the site. I went to this Dialogue in the Dark exhibit here in the city.
That is fascinating.
That
yeah, I have. Yeah. That really sounds like a lot of fun, either to attend or even to work at, I would think.
Either way, I mean, my mom was saying to me, hey, why don't you work there if you can't find a job in social work? I'm like, all right.
Think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I was there in the dark for about an hour with two people who I know, actually. They're both sighted.
Right.
And it's interesting to see how people react to it. I mean, I try to empathize. I try to put myself in their shoes, so to speak. But I don't know. I've been blind since I was 3. So for me, it's just so normal at this point.
Right. Exactly. Well, what are some things that you would like to delve into as far as your writing or your research goes?
I want to be more open to trying different kinds of foods. As I said before, I'm very picky. And so it sort of prevented me from trying different types of foods that, you know, people are always saying Thai food, vegetarian food, you know, food from different cultures and areas, and I want to be more open to that.
Well, in just the little bit of reading that I was able to do, it looks like that you are health conscious. You're aware of the healthy alternatives.
Well, aware, yes. Actually, use them, no. I mean,
okay.
I'm sort of all things to all people. You know, I can be very health conscious one day, and the next day I could be eating barbecue and fried and chocolate and, you know.
Well, let's face it, sometimes you just want some good fried food, maybe some...
That's it. That's the bottom line, Jamie, yeah.
Exactly.
So, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, health conscious, I'm definitely aware. I always know if I'm in a neighborhood, I'll look for a healthy place, and I've been creating my own salads. I've been doing that for a while because,
oh, nice.
You know, they have little salad bars here, and the smoothies are great too. I do a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's all really good. It's just getting to the vegan / vegetarian point is tough for me.
Same here.
Yeah, it's not the fact that I don't love meat. I mean, I think it's great, but some of these items, I look, they have like all these different meat substitutes and things that just don't even sound right to me. You know, like tofu and seitan or whatever. It's like, we're going to take a hamburger and we're going to put in some lettuce and tofu. Really?
Right. Yeah.
That's not going to do it for me. I'm sorry. But knowing me, I'll get there someday.
Right. All the name of research. There you go.
Yes. My other idea, which is totally unrelated to that, is I would like to have an event, like a massive chocolate taste test, where we gather people together and we buy maybe 5 or 6 different brands of chocolate. You know, you can go high-end Godiva, low-end Hershey's. Just get a mix of them, and no one knows what they're tasting. And
that's
just try to, just try to elicit their reactions and see, you know, what is the difference? Is there a difference? Which ones do people really prefer when there's no label on them?
Yeah, that would be a fun experiment. It will be interesting to see if you're able to do that, what kind of results you get.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So people can obviously go to www.blindtastetest.net and check out the blog.
Correct.
What are some other contact options?
Okay, well, I'm on Twitter, and Jamie, I just love Twitter. I'll tell you that right now. It's very addicting, and so I have about 300 followers. I don't know who they are. I mean, I know some of them, but
right.
I don't know all of them.
Right.
I hope they're not robots or aliens, but, you know, you can't be sure of that. And I think it's great. I mean, people can always go to Twitter, and my name on there is Blind Blog. So just type in @blindblog and then just say whatever you want to say to me. Leave me a comment. It has to be within 140 characters, of course.
Yep.
And then I'll get back to you ASAP. I mean, that's just if you want to chat or if you have any questions about food recommendations. Also, I have this email address I started, which is theblindfoodcritic@gmail.com. And that's, you know, for just my public email address for anyone that wants to talk to me. Press inquiries. You want to go out, meet at a restaurant here in the city and do a review together. Whatever it is, I'm here. I'm pretty humble. I talk to anybody. So
yeah,
that's it. And there's always a website. There's always, you know, there are places for comments. I also have a page on there called Let's Dish. So if you want to start a discussion, that's a great place to do it.
Okay.
And I'm here for you.
Very good. Well, I'm sure that you will get some traffic to your website after people listen to this.
Thank you.
And I encourage people to
definitely
pay a visit. So,
well, thank you. And you know, before I go, I just want to say that Serotalk is a great thing. And I was up till about 1 o'clock in the morning listening to old podcasts, just trying to get a feel of what happens on the show because, you know, I do listen, but
right.
I have to really get a good feeling of exactly what happens. And I really enjoy everything you do, Jamie. So,
well, thank you.
I just want to thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. We've been visiting with Dan Aronoff, blind food critic, here on the Serotalk podcast.
This is Serotalk.
I'm visiting today with Michael Barnes, and Michael is going to tell us about an iOS app that kind of brings back some memories for me. First of all, Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, how you doing?
Glad to
be up here.
So the story kind of is, back in the 90s, when I first got into computing, I was made aware of the very first computer games that blind people could play, that I was aware of anyway, were some games by a guy named Rich Destino. And these were back in the days of DOS. And Michael, I'll bet you have some memories of those too. Why don't you kind of share a little bit about what some of those games were back in the DOS days?
Okay, well, I'd definitely be happy to. And first of all, let me just thank you for have me up here on this podcast, and I just have to thank people at Serotalk for the wonderful things they're doing with accessibility. I think they're awesome. I've been a System Access user for going on 3 years now, come January.
Very good.
But to get into the DOS thing, I definitely remember playing these DOS games in school. I had sight growing up, and I lost my sight in 08, so I had the opportunity of playing video games. And I remember playing the old Atari games, and this is what gave me the initiative to play these DOS games. Because people always ask me on the Gamers List, friends, why do you like old games? For why do you like all those beeps and twerps? Well, growing up playing the Atari 2600, Pac-Man, Frogger, Donkey Kong, and so forth, you know, they had the old beeps and twerps, and I love old school gaming. So when I was in school in the 90s, and I sat down, I played Destination Mars, which is a very, very popular game amongst us blind folks. I had sight, so I was able to actually use my eyes to read the text and not the DOS screen readers. And I used to play that. I used to play Run for President. And when I was going to school, a lot of my friends would play. They were very, very popular back then. Matter of fact, I didn't get a chance to start playing those games till 97 when I started my second year of sophomore in high school. I was a sophomore in high school and I went to the Georgia Academy for the Blind, and I got a chance to learn about accessibility because I didn't know much. One thing I knew was Braille and cane mobility and CNI dog work, and that's all that I knew. But when I went to the School for the Blind here in Georgia, that's when I got to learn about screen readers, magnifiers, that is, accessible games. So I definitely remember playing these games. I used to play them in school and talk to my friends about them a lot, and they were a very, very popular game back then.
Okay. That's excellent. So you kind of became aware of some of those old DOS games by a guy named Rich Desteno, as we mentioned earlier. Run for President, Destination Mars were a couple of them that we just mentioned. So kind of fast forward for us to the iPhone, iPad, iPod. What are you using right now in your iOS device?
I'm actually using the iPhone 3GS with OS 5.1, and that's what I'm using. And I got hooked onto the iPhone because this is how it all started, the whole deal. I lost my sight, like I was saying. I lost my sight in 08. And at the time, I was only aware of Jim Kitchen's games. I was only aware of his games. Of course, you can go check out his games, which right. They are free, at kitchensinc.net. That is K-I-T-C-H. ENSINC.NET. And he's got free games on there. And I played his game on a computer, actually, even when I had sight. And I would enjoy them because I was like, I'm not able to, you know, strain my eyes. I'm not able to play these. Well, when I lost my sight in no way, it really was it was a very hard time for me. And Jim's games are the only games that I had to play. And I start remembering how, man, it'd be cool if I could get a hold of Destination Mars. Man, I'd like to play that. So fast forward to last year, 2010, a guy that I went to school with, he, you know, would always talk about the iPhone and the voiceover and the accessibility. And I'm like, well, I don't know, man. I'm kind of nervous about touchscreens because, you know, I'm blind. And I wasn't too much impressed with all the Fiji fadgets, as I call it, technology. You know, I was one of these basic persons. But when he explained it to me how I could use the iPhone for a variety of things like research, gaming, you know, things like that, I was like, okay, I'll check it out. So I got me one, and I was like, oh, wow. Then when I started learning about accessible games on the iPhone and some of the video games are accessible for the blind, I was like, oh, yes, this is what I'm talking about. And it just made me feel that, wow, I can, you know, this is going to be cool right here. Because I had audio accessible games on the computer, and now I'm able to play them when I go on the road somewhere. I'm able to pull out my phone if I'm riding down the road and I want to play a real quick game, I can pull out my phone and just play my game. So that's what kind of got me into getting the iPhone. And I tell you, Apple has done a tremendous job with that.
Okay. So you managed to get a hold of a developer. How did that come about?
Well, like I said, I've been playing Jim Kitchen's games since 08. And I've been real good friends with Jim. And I've been talking to him about, you know, getting a hold of those old DOS games. and maybe see if somebody can convert them to Windows so that we'd all would have the new sounds, you know, like actual realistic sounds.
Right.
And, you know, Jim's like, well, I've tried to contact him, but I'm able to get no success with it. So Jim had the very first version of Destination, which was 1.0, and he also had Run for President 3.1, and he sent those to me, and I played those. And I'm like, man, I wish I could get the latest version that he had.
Mm-hmm.
The version that I played in school with the asteroid where you walk around getting all your treasure and stuff. So I got on the gamers list and I contacted one of the developers on the gamers list and I'm like, hey, do you know how I could possibly get a hold of these old DOS games? And he gave me Richard's email. I sent Richard an email saying, you know, Richard, hey, listen, I'd like to see if I can get a copy of all your DOS games that you created. And he was so kind, he sent them to me in an email, and I was like, okay, cool. And I asked him a question. I said, now, Richard, are these games freeware? Am I allowed to distribute these games amongst people that I know? And, of course, he said, yes, they are freeware. I'm welcome to pass them out for free. So I was like, great, you know, cool. So now that I had them on my Windows computer and everything, of course, I'm running on my PC, I'm running Windows 7 32-bit.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, for 64-bit users out there, bad news. If you do want a copy of the games for your computer, you might as well hang it up because they won't run. Windows 7 64-bit does not like 16-bit games for some reason.
Okay.
Which that's what they are.
All right.
And so that's basically how I came to get a hold of the game in my possession was through Rich. And of course, those who's on the gamers list, I got on there and I uploaded them to SimSpace so that the people on the gamers list could get a hold of them. And that's how that went with me having them on my computer.
Okay. So how did they get from the computer then to the iPhone?
Good question. And I will give you that good answer. Well, it all started when, like I said, in the beginning of this podcast, I stated that I love old school games.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure, Jamie, that I said that. Did I not say that?
You did indeed, yes.
Okay, well, because I love old school games, I have the Nintendo Wii, and I enjoy playing my Wii, and I enjoy playing today's accessible games. However, because I am a game fanatic, mm-hmm. and if I stayed at my site, I would definitely be into a lot of video games. But unfortunately, I'm not able to have my site. But so because I'm into old school games, I have been trying on my computer to get the DOS sounds with these games. And unfortunately, because of the process in Windows 7, it's too fast. So if you play with the sound, you're going to get a real bad feedback and you'll have to restart your machine to get it to stop. So the only way you can play the games on Windows is play without sound.
Okay.
Now, I went and found a sound emulator that would work, but unfortunately it was for Windows XP and lower. So I said, okay, let me get a virtual machine. So I got a virtual machine, put it on my computer. Unfortunately, the sound emulator did not work. Then I said, well, let me go get DOSBox, see what I can do with that. Unfortunately, DOSBox is not accessible with screen readers. And so I said, man, I got to figure a way of doing this. So when I got on the gamers list, I got on there, I said, does anybody know of a DOS emulator that will be accessible for the blind? And they said, yeah, there's one on the iPhone. So, of course, they gave me the information about it. And I said, okay. And when I looked the information up, looked in the App Store, looked on iTunes, looked on any Apple, because Apple is so strict, and I call Apple finicky for these reasons. Apple's very finicky. And you probably know that, Jamie, from the iBlink Radio app about how y'all really got to make sure the app is to their liking, their standards, so they want to prove it.
Right.
So because of that, the iDOS emulator was taken off of the App Store. And the only way you're going to get it is to jailbreak your phone, which I'm not going to go through all that hard process to do this, that, and the other to get the app. So I'm sitting there thinking, man, how can I get this out of these games? And I thought it was a hopeless point because I know friends is like a friend, Joseph Weaver. He's like, all they are just beeps and chirps. What do you want with those stupid, stupid sounds? I like, well, I'm like, Joseph, if you understood gaming as much as I do, you'd understand that. So I sat down on YouTube and I played some old video clips of different Atari games. I said, I love that sound.
Yeah.
Of course, my friend Jimmy Macon, he's like, well, Michael, these are just DOS games, man. Why don't you give it up? But because I had a will and a mindset to do it, I started doing my research. So I found a developer, Chachi Lee, who's a real nice guy, who is in charge of the Fast Intelligent Company, which is litchi.com, LITCHIN.com. And when I contacted him, he sent me a message back and he said, sure, what kind of, because I wanted to take and put these games on the phone, and he sent me an email. He said, okay, Michael, he says, well, sure, send me the files and I'll build you a game pack, you know, so you can have these games on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, cool, you know. So I sent it to him. And at first he was like, well, I can get the sounds to work great. Unfortunately, I can't get, he said, unfortunately, I didn't, you know, invent this game engine for the blind.
Right.
So I'm like, okay. I said, well, Litchi, Chargy, that's his name. Sometimes he goes by Litchi. I said, Chargy, I said, I have a website that Apple has put together that I think you ought to check in to show you how to make your engine accessible on the iOS devices. So I sent it to him. He looked at it, and then he said, let me get back with you. So within a couple hours, he sent me another email, and he says, try this build that I made for you. So I got on there, and I said, wow. No, VoiceOver is reading the app. It was reading the app and things like that. And I told him, I said, yep, it's just working. So then we started kinking with it to make it to work out the kinks and all, get all the kinks out.
Yep.
And it took about a week to do that. So when I told him, I said, you know what? Why don't we try to put this in the App Store? So he said, okay, let's do it. So we put in the App Store, and of course the app is totally free. And he says, well, you know, what do you want to call this app? And I said, well, because Richard allowed me to have a copy of these games and allow me to distribute these games for free amongst anybody that wants them, let's name them after him. Let's name it Destino Games. And for those of you who wonder how to spell that, that is D-E-S-T-E-N-O, and then, of course, the word game.
Mm-hmm.
And if you also type Fast Intelligence, which is one word, in the search box in App Store, you'll find it too.
Okay.
And so he said, okay, we'll call it Destino Games. And then he told me to write up a description for it. So I talked to my friend Jeffrey Dawson. I said, Jeffrey, I said, listen, since you are good at typing good documents, and since you do typing for fan fiction, I wonder if you would type some documents for me. So Jeffrey said, yeah, sure, I'll do it. So he typed up the description, and he also did the in-app description. So those who have the app, if you go to the About Destino Games, that description there, he wrote that up. I just kind of told him a little bit of what I want to say, but he put it in his words. And that's how that happened. And that's why people who go to the App Store, they'll say this app was put together by the following people. That's why you'll see my name, Jeffrey, Chachi, and Richard's name there, because it took us to put it together. Richard created the games in the 90s, which
right.
I think were wonderful. I had a copy of the games, that I wanted to be able to have the sound.
Yeah.
Chachi programmed the engine, and Jeffrey wrote the documentation. So that is how the app came to existing. And when Apple, and while I was waiting for a week, it took 1 week for Apple to approve it. And while I was waiting, I was like, man, Apple's going to get finicky on me. Watch this. I guarantee you they're not going to approve it. They're going to act stupid, and I'm going to have to say something. And when they approved it, Chachi sent me an email. He said, Michael, good news. The app has been approved. And I about fell on my face. I'm like, wow. And because I never had my name on anything big or worldwide, and now my name's on the app that's available in all countries.
Mm-hmm. About that. Well, that's a great example of teamwork and advocacy and kind of old meets new. That's a pretty cool story, actually. Have you had a chance to talk to Rich DeStenno since the app went on the App Store?
Yes, and I want to also say something, add something to what you said about teamwork and stuff. That's also show you ambition. You got an ambition. If you set your mind to it, my friend Jimmy said this. He said, Michael, he said, you know why I was encouraging you about that app? Because my friend Joseph and Jimmy, who I mentioned a few moments ago,
yeah.
When I told them it was released and they got the app, they was like, you know, they told me, they said, we're real proud of you. And my friend William Brockington, he was another supporter of it, Jim Kitchen, William Brockington, Joseph Weaver, Jimmy Macon, these guys here, and the people at the Gamers List, got to give my props to people at the Gamers List. They was all supportive of me putting the app together, and basically what all they said, to sum it up, they're like, you set your mind to it, complete it. If you set your mind to it, follow through. So that's what I did. I set my mind to it. I had a task. I had a goal, and I completed it.
That's great.
But, yes, I have talked to Richard. Matter of fact, I talk with Richard Odestano from time to time. I emailed him to let him know. I told him, I said, Richard, I said, check out this app. And I showed him everything that I did with it. And he's like, Michael, great job. He says, thank you for allowing people get a hold of my games, and thank you for allowing it to be a free app.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, Richard is very impressed with it, and he thinks it's wonderful that people can now go on there. Those who have played the games, like myself and like you and others, can go on there to the iOS and play all DOS games with or without the sound. And the cool thing about it is use an updated screen reader. One
right.
That don't sound like a robotic speech.
Yeah.
Now, true, Apple do need to change that voice. That Samantha voice, I don't like it. I sometimes use the British voice on there.
Yeah.
Even though I am an American, I do use the British voice. But with the ability that Apple has, they could put Alex on there.
That would be nice. I will agree. I would enjoy that if they did that.
That's why I wish Saratech would put a screen reader, another voice on there for the a screen reader on there. That would
right.
be cool.
Right. Well, listen, Michael, this has been a real fun time. I want to really thank you, first of all, for coming on the podcast and telling us that story. And want to encourage people to go to the App Store, look for DeStenno, D-E space S-T-E-N-O, DeStenno Games, free app. Some of you will remember those games. Some of you will get to play them for the first time. So thanks a lot, man.
Definitely, definitely. And anybody that has any issues, feel free to contact me. Let me give y'all my email address. That is cyco@samobile.net. I done had a couple people email me, but I definitely want y'all to go play it. It is free. Let me say this, because I've had a couple people to give the app a bad rating, and if people are ignorant and cannot read, it says, and I quote, turn on voiceover before playing the game, because this app, yes, this app has some text on the screen, however, this app was intended for blind people. Mm-hmm. And decided people want to play it. Well, guess what? Because y'all don't adapt to, y'all won't adapt your things to us, we're not going to adapt our things to you. So turn on voiceover.
Fair enough. All right. Well, that's excellent. And I'm sure people will definitely check out the game.
ZeroTalk Podcast 90 will return after this.
Everybody, let's go, let's go. Ho, ho, ho! Welcome, everyone, to West High School Spring Fling. Hey, where we at? Where we at?
All right, I've gone through all the tracks. Just move through the beats. Do your thing.
All right, everyone, let's hear it for West High's own Brooke Turner, a.k.a. DJ Hook.
Scratching up my first school dance takes confidence. So we're getting into college. I've got what it takes. Okay, I went through the practice sessions. I slept good. I feel good.
We will now begin the test. Please take out your pencils.
I got this.
We're all good at something. Maybe it's breakdancing or skateboarding or video games. Whatever you're good at, you had the skills to make it happen. And those same skills will help us get to college. Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
I'm pleased to be joined today by Russell Rowland, who is a college freshman. And we're going to talk today about technology and kind of how it impacts Russell's life a little bit. So Russell, first of all, welcome to SeroTalk.
Thanks for having me, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm looking forward to the interview.
Excellent. So let's talk about your early schooling. Where did you go to school?
Well, Jamie, I attended the Oklahoma School for the Blind from 1992 until I graduated in May of 2011. So that's about how long I attended there. And, I used a Perkins Brailler for quite a while, but the actual first piece of assistive technology that I began using was in the seventh grade. I began using the BrailleLite 2000. Most people were beginning BrailleLite users. I later progressed to the Millennium 20. And in my sophomore year, I was introduced to the BrailleNote M-Power. And I've been using that and have just recently gotten an Apex for college as well. I also use the Victor Reader Stream to access books from Bookshare, RFBND, and NLS. And I also use that to record my college lectures. I am a JAWS user currently, but I'm planning to... I have used System Access, and I'm on your $39.95 month plan for the 2 year, and I plan to reactivate that. Just kind of ran into some money issues on that, but I'm very fond of System Access, so I plan to get that squared away.
So it sounds like you're really using a lot of different technology, or have. I assume from some of the things you said that you are definitely a Braille reader, correct?
That's correct. And that's one of the things that I really want to kind of discuss at the moment here. When I was listening to the most recent episode of This Month in Assistive Technology on your Serospectives, right, I found your opinions and both Jeff Bishop and Wade Wingler and Lisa Salinger's opinions on Braille very interesting. Personally... having, Braille is such a big deal to me. It's such a, a great thing. And one thing that I want to point out, and Braille is such a great thing, the Apex itself is such a great blessing to have. I am able to, take notes at a much greater speed than most of my sighted college, classmates. With the Apex, I'm actually able to engage in, if my philosophy professor will say, okay, guys, we have a, we're going to do a quiz over the reading. I'm able to just pull out my Apex and simply open up a document and do that quiz. With my Apex, I'm also able to submit my, our philosophy class. We simply just do essays for our exams. So with the Apex, I'm able to do that as well. But another thing that I really want to point out, and this is the thing that I really just miss, when it comes to college, yes, I do use RFBND books, but, if you come across words, in a textbook that you just, you don't know how to spell, or, let's say you come across a proper name or something, that's something that I really miss. Or I really miss being able to look down at that Braille display and being able to see that. And another thing I want to point out is that, and this is another reason why I'm so fond of the Apex, is, my professors, my music appreciation professor, my history professor, and my philosophy professor, and American federal government professors send out study guides to me through email. And I love having access to those because, you know, if there are certain names that I need to put down in my notes, you know, when I'm studying, I'm able to open those up in my Braille note and see them in Braille. And that's such a big thing. And, you know, I want to highlight kind of some of the things that you and Jeff Bishop said as well. One of the things that really caught me that Jeff Bishop said was, if people stop learning Braille, then what's the point of having Braille signs? And that really caught me. And the reason that I want to talk about that is because one of the buildings that I'm in has Braille signs, I mean, all over the place. And in fact, I want to go to an experience that I had earlier today. I was, you know, going into class, and as I was, you know, coming up to the room that I have my history class and my American federal government class in, I was able to reach up and look at the Braille sign and make sure that, you know, I was at the correct room. And also on the elevator that I use to go from the first floor to the third floor of the Fine Arts Building where I take my music appreciation and philosophy classes, there is Braille on that. So that's another reason why Braille is just such, you know. And another thing I'm going to point out here is I'm planning to become a music major. And, you know, I find it very saddening and disheartening that Braille music is losing its popularity. I, in fact, am going to see if there's some way, you know, through Hadley that I can learn Braille music again, because, you know, I stepped away from it when I was in the sixth grade. And, you know, I just find it very disheartening that Braille music is losing its popularity.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you make some very good points there. I think one of the things about reading that you can do in Braille is you can slow down your pace. I mean, if you need to really concentrate on something, or if something catches your fancy, yeah, you can pause a recording, but if it's in Braille, it's easy to back up and reread it or slowly read it or whatever. So I definitely agree with you, as well as the points about the looking at proper names and that sort of thing. So those are some really good points. I think it's also interesting that you point out that you are able to interact with your professors through Braille. You know, even though they don't read Braille, I assume, they can send materials to you quite easily.
Yeah, and, you know, again, the Apex gives me that equal access.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of technology out there that is doing that right now. I don't know if you've had a chance to, you know, to play with an iOS device, iPod or iPhone or...
I am an iPhone user, actually, and that's another thing I want to point out. The iPhone, I mean, man, what can you not say about an iPhone? I use iBlink Radio, obviously, to keep up with the news that's going on in our community. I'm able to use, obviously, Mail and Safari, quite useful. And one of the things I want to point out, one of the apps that I used quite frequently as I, you know, began my college, you know, experience was Around Me. I was able to use Around Me to look up, you know, certain restaurants that did delivery. So, you know, let's say I didn't want to go out to the cafeteria. You know, I was able to use the iPhone to look up not only the restaurant, but the number, and I was able to call them and, you know.
Right, and get a delivery or whatever.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But, I mean, the iPhone, you know, and this is, you know, I just remember trying to explain, you know, Steve Jobs passing, you know, the blind community just poured out, you know. It was one of the things that we kind of came together on. And I remember just trying to explain to one of my sighted roommates, you know, what the iPhone and what Steve Jobs did for us
right.
as a community. I mean, you know, we had, you know, before it was, you know, $300 to make a phone accessible when it came to things like Talks and mobile speak.
Right.
Whereas, you know, we could go into a store. Now, we could go into an Apple store and get a phone for you know, the same price that a sighted person does and have accessibility.
Right.
And that's something that it's very hard to impress upon a sighted person how important that is.
I think that's true. I think it's hard for them to understand, you know, the fact, although I think it's probably becoming more and more true for sighted people as well, that, I mean, I went on vacation with a friend and he sat and read the news headlines on his phone while our wives were shopping, and I thought to myself, he's doing the same thing that guys have done for millennia, which is to read the newspaper. He just happened to be doing it on his phone. So yeah. I think that is actually beginning to change a little bit, but I agree with you that it's a little hard for people to maybe understand the level of passion that we have seemingly about our devices, but it's really not the devices themselves. I think it's just the accessibility that those devices give us, and now Android is making quite a bit of progress and coming, you know, along as well in that area.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with you on that. You know, one of the things that I want to point out is I was able to use iBooks to access PDF files. And one thing that I want to kind of turn to briefly is sort of the impact that Saratech has had on my education. You know, I started using System Access with the K-12 program that Saratech offers. I had it on a thumb drive for a while, and I used it with my Windows XP computer. And then, you know, one day, you know, I just decided, you know, okay, I'll give this 7-day free trial a shot. You know, because I'd heard about, you know, SAMNet and other things. That was really the first time that I had been able to, you know, really experience things like Describe Video Program. I mean, you know, you don't see that too often, but, you know, for the first time I was able to go and, you know, download a movie and, you know, truly watch it in a sense and, you know, really get a real feel for what's out there, you know. And also, another thing I want to point out is I used a free 7-day trial of DocuScan Plus. And one of the things I was able to do with that is I was able to take a PDF file that one of my professors had given me and have access to it. And that was a big thing.
Yeah, I really I enjoy all of Saratech's products, but I think DocuScan Plus is probably one of my favorite. It's absolutely a lightweight OCR product and not very resource intensive. And it's fun to be able to save your documents to the cloud, not really worry about where they are. Go retrieve them later.
Yeah, and one thing that really caught me about Saratech, and this is something that I, you know, am just especially, but I love Mike Calvo's philosophy, which is, you know, accessibility is a right, not a privilege. I mean, sure. there are so many people that, you know, don't have access to something like JAWS, and now you've got people like, you know, Mike, who are, you know, giving, you know, blind people accessibility for such low rates, and then you've got people like Michael Kern and Jamie Tay, who are, you know, doing work with NVDA. And also, of course, Steve, who's given us access on the Mac. So I think it's kind of getting to the point now where people are starting to realize, you know, listen, we finally have equal access to things like, you know, the web and just Windows in general. You know, I think, you know, Microsoft in itself and even Kindle and that's another thing, you know, Amazon, this is something that you know, whenever I think it was podcast, might have been, you know, 79 that Mike really let Amazon have it in a sense, you know, about the Kindle Fire. But it's so true. I mean, you know, if Steve can give us access to things, you know, electronic books through iBooks, then why can't Amazon? You know, we deserve that right, obviously. So
I'll say again, I think we're doing some creative and very professional advocating, and that pleases me to see us as a community be able to express ourselves forcefully, but yet very professionally, very positively, and let people, well, I guess, educate people to what we really need. So I think there's some good things happening there as well.
Well, I would certainly agree with you on that fact.
And, you know, I think you're doing that just as being a college student, being an excellent role model. I mean, your sighted counterparts see you on campus. I don't know if you use a cane or a dog, but
I'm a cane user, actually. And that's another thing I want to point out. There is, and this is something that I was not too happy to find out, but there is another blind student on campus, but she's not actually independent. She's actually being guided around by her grandmother all the time. And that personally just upset me because I will admit, yes, I was hesitant to go to college, but you know, through some kind of coercion and, you know, really kind of pepping me up of my, you know, my mother kind of, you know, told me, okay, you know, you can do this.
Right.
I called, one of my rehab counselors and said, can you get an O&M instructor up here to help me? And, you know, they did. And I have a Trekker Breeze, and that has helped me a lot. And also the university, you know, they had a former student who was actually visually impaired, and she came up and worked with me for a couple of months. And
that's nice.
You know, and what I want to point out is the fact that, you know, when a blind person, when you choose to go to college, you've got to be in it for the long haul, man. You've got to have that drive. And this is something that I want to point out is I was in a philosophy class one day and I just got an email from my instructor saying that, you know, I got 194 points out of 200 on my first exam. I was pretty happy about that. And he walks in and he walks up to this student and he says, listen, you know, you haven't taken the quiz. You haven't taken either of the quizzes. And do you want to take the exam? And the guy said, you know, well, now I'm going to go ahead and bomb the exam. And I'm looking at the guy and I'm going, are you serious? You know, because all you had to do was, you know, I mean, he'd obviously read the chapters, you know, because he'd said that. And, you know, all he had to do was write a simple, I think it was maybe a 5 or 6 paragraph essay or something to that effect. And, you know, the point is that you've got to have that drive. I mean, I've seen sighted students just bomb, you know, classes.
Right.
And I think it was the fact, you know, that even though I am totally blind, I think that was what drove me. That is what gave me that want to, you know, just, you know, prove to people that I can be successful. I mean, I'm at a 3.5, you know, GPA at this point, you know.
Very good.
I am showing people, okay, that I can get it done.
Well, I mean, I think that things that you're doing is you're advocating for yourself. You are, you are motivated. You're a hard worker. And I think those are the things that we have to do in life generally. But I think as blind people, I think there's a little extra importance on that. And, you know, you pointed out the person that maybe had, you know, less skills, and that happens, and maybe you can be a positive influence on that person. Maybe you can encourage her, you know, in some way. So, kind of looking forward, you mentioned that you're a music major. What would you like to do when you're out of school?
Well, you know, I'm actually planning to double major, both in music and in history. I either want to teach either one of those subjects, or I want to be, you know, do research, you know, as a historian.
Right.
You know, and again, I'm just kind of looking forward, you know.
Absolutely.
Looking to the future. But I want to point out some professors that have been particularly, really instrumental in, you know, helping me. I had a music appreciation instructor on the first day of classes, or I think it was actually a week before. I went to my instructors and I said, you know, listen, this is what I need. You know, and I explained to my music appreciation professor that I had the fourth edition, you know, of the text, or not the fourth edition, I'm sorry, the 10th edition of the textbook, and they'd come out with the 11th edition. You know, RFB&D had no plans, obviously, of recording that yet. And, you know, he was very willing to accommodate me there. He actually gave me a document with all the differing page numbers on it.
Nice.
And also, one of the things I was just, you know, blown away by this, we have to do three concert reviews mm-hmm. for one of our finals. And, you know, I remember him coming to me and saying, you know, listen, we've got a Jeffrey Keyser was actually the pianist that was playing that night. And he said, listen, you know, we've got a concert. It's $5. And, you know, I said, well, professor, I have the money, but would you mind, you know, coming over to my apartment? Because I do have an apartment on campus. It's, you know, just a college provided apartment, and giving me a ride. And this just kind of blew me away. He was like, sure, I'll meet you there at 4:30.
Nice.
It was just, you know, kind of, you know, wow, you know,
yeah.
And that was the thing though. But, you know, and I decided to ask him, you know, why was it that you decided to, you know, assist me in this way? And he said, look, you know, you've shown appreciation for this class. You've really shown me that you love music, that you're an open-minded person. Because, you know, he had told me that he was very disappointed in some of the students because, you know, they'd either walk out or they'd look like they weren't paying attention. And even one person had the audacity to pull out his iPod and plug in his headset and just totally ignore the class. And he said, look, you know, I consider you a friend. You've shown me that you care about, you know, what you're doing. You really want to succeed. And it just, you know, it really touched me. And, you know, he'd said that I have shown him that, you know, I'm willing to give it my all.
That's great. How do you see technology playing a part in your life moving forward? What are some, if you had a wish list, what would you like to see?
You know, I want to see Windows someday become as fully accessible as the Mac. Obviously, so I want to see that happen. You know, I remember listening back to a previous episode of Main Menu in an interview you did with Chase Crispin and Tyler Uronic when you were the host of Main Menu.
Right.
And one of the things that Chase pointed out was an indoor GPS. I do want to see that because that would certainly help us. I hope cell phone accessibility, you know, really improves, obviously. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. I hope Braille just keeps going. And, you know, I just really want to see, you know, I really, you know, I understand that, you know, we're being able to interact in a more mainstream way, you know, with things like the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod Touch, the Mac, Android. But I really want to see Braille continue to grow and continue to be a viable part of, you know, our community. Personally, you know, I think that, you know, just, you know, I hope innovation continues, and I hope that we continue to have as much access as we can. I think that, you know, things like the internet, you know, obviously, you know, I hope that web accessibility continues to be what it is. What I really want to see personally is companies like Amazon and Microsoft, you know, just realize that, yes, we are a viable market.
Exactly.
You know, that's all we truly want. We just want accessibility. And Mike put it so eloquently that accessibility is a right, not a privilege. One thing that I want to see, you know, in the future, and this has been a major problem for me, is, you know, one of the things that my roommates have been very willing to do for me is, you know, let's say I need, you know, just a few, you know, household items here or there, you know, as long as I give them the cash, they've been willing to go out and purchase things for me. And ATM accessibility is just a big thing, you know, and I've had, you know, people come up to me. I remember I had a professor say, you know, why is there Braille on the drive up side of an ATM?
And I'm like, yeah, that's the proverbial question that you get all the time. That's just intrigue-sided people.
You know, I said, well, you know, to be honest, I really don't know. But, you know, ATM accessibility, I really just want to see talking ATMs, because at this point, if I want to go and I want to withdraw money from my bank account, I mean, yeah, I have all the information, you know, I've memorized all that, but, you know, I can't see what's on the screen. I don't know which button to press to, you know, make a withdrawal or make a balance inquiry.
You know, enlist some assistance that you, even though you trust people and you find people that you can trust, you still don't want to have to. It's kind of embarrassing, you know.
Yeah,
I totally get that. Well, listen, man, I really have enjoyed visiting with you, and I think you're going to do great things. I think you have a lot to say, and I'll be anxious to hear more from you in the future.
Yeah, just anytime you guys want to do a podcast, you know, just an interview with me, that's fine. You know, of course, if anybody wants to contact me, my email address is russell.roland1@gmail.com. That's Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, dot Roland, R-O-W-L-A-N-D, 1@gmail.com. And, you know, just in closing, you know, hey, Mike, Ricky, Joe, everybody down there at Saratech, you know, look, you guys have been very helpful to me. Just keep up the good work, guys, and just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's really helped us out quite a bit. Just keep it going.
Those are some really great words, and I'd like to thank you for joining me today, Russell. And we will hear from you in the future. We've been visiting with Russell Roland here on the Saratech Podcast.
Hello, I'm here today to tell you about Microsoft Security Essentials and about a possible pitfall that you could have if you are using this program with a screen reader. I have been using this program almost since it came out. It is a free program from Microsoft. It is excellent. And several months ago, I turned on my main computer and I had no speech. It would not boot into Windows. So I took it to a technician who fortunately is also a friend and is willing to work with me so that I can learn rather than just saying, well, it's this and I fixed it and it's done. So he called me and he said, you have viruses on your computer. And I foolishly said, that's impossible. I use Microsoft Security Essentials. And he said, well, it picked up on them, but you never cleaned them. And I said, well, I never got a message to clean them. He had gotten my computer up and running, of course, and had quarantined these viruses, but left them so that I could see them. So what I was able to do is remote into my desktop computer from the netbook that I had at the time. And when I remoted in, he said, okay, go here, go here, go here. All right, right there. There are your viruses. And I was not aware that this was an issue, and it is partly an issue because of the way that Microsoft has labeled controls in this particular program. I'm currently using a public beta of this program, So if you hear wording that's slightly different from yours, that's why. Although, as far as the way the program is laid out, there really is very little difference. The other thing I want to let you know is that I am using System Access, but when I found this problem, I was able to verify that you got the same information whether you were using System Access, or JAWS, or WindowEyes, or NVDA. So this is important regardless of what your screen reader of choice happens to be. I'm using Windows 7. If you are using Windows Vista, you can access the program the same way. If you're using Windows XP, depending on your layout, and you have this program installed, you can go to Start Menu, Programs, and then press M until you reach Microsoft Security Essentials, or Start Menu, All Programs, and then Microsoft Security Essentials. For those using Windows 7 and Vista, it's very simple. I press the Windows key, which will take me to search box.
Start menu, search programs and files, search box, editable text, land.
And I type in the word security.
Search Microsoft Security Essentials.
And I pressed SE, and that was enough. It brought up Microsoft Security Essentials. So I'm now going to press enter.
Taskbar, Microsoft Security Essentials, quit, radio button.
Now, just to make sure that we're all at the starting place, the same starting point, I'm going to shift tab back. And if you're following along, you might want to do the same. Shift tab back until you reach the home button.
Home button.
I do find with this program, sometimes when it starts, you'll land on various elements, but it's always in this general area. So let's go through this first. This should be relatively familiar. First, you have your home button.
Quick radio button selected.
Then there are two radio buttons where you can choose the type of scan. There is quick.
Full radio button not selected.
And full. And you can press space to select either of these options.
Custom radio button not selected.
My apologies. There are three radio buttons. The third is custom. I always forget about that because I tend to either do a quick scan or a full scan. And for the most part, I think it's advisable to do one of those because, as a rule, you're not going to know when doing a custom scan what exactly you should scan.
Scan now button, Alt plus S.
There's the scan now button.
Change my scan schedule, link.
This is very important. You can change your scan schedule so that you can scan with whatever kind of scan you want at whatever interval you want.
Home button.
And then you're back to the home button. Now, if you're using a screen reader, you would think, as I did, that that's all there is. Unfortunately, that is not the case. This is because Microsoft has labeled home as a button, when in actuality, it is a tab. So, depending on how you prefer to do it, you can either control tab.
Update button.
Or you can right arrow. And this says update button. And this is not really an update button. This is an update tab. And many people, through whatever means, find this and they press it and they think that they're updating and you're not.
Update button, Alt plus U.
You need to tab to where it says update button, Alt plus U, where it gives you the shortcut. Then you can either do Alt plus U or enter or space and it will update.
Update button.
And then we're back to the update button. So that is the only thing that you can do under the update tab. Moving to the next tab, I'm just doing it with right arrow.
History button.
History. And we'll skip this for the moment, but we will come back to it.
Settings button.
Settings.
List scheduled scan. 1 of 7.
And if you go into this area, you can change various things about how the program works. And in one of the Serotalk podcasts, near the end of 2010, they talk about excluding screen reader directories so that they are not scanned, especially if you have an older computer and that directory is being scanned, you can notice some choppy speech during the process. So that might be something worth checking out. Also, speaking of resources, I should mention that Microsoft Security Essentials can be a little difficult to find. I first Googled just plain old Microsoft Security Essentials, and there were lots of articles, and I was trying to weed through all kinds of information to actually find the file. So you have two options. You can search for Microsoft Security Essentials direct download, or you can go to the Nynite website. This is a great resource, actually, and it has links for many programs, and it's great if you need more than one, or even just one, or if you're setting up a computer from scratch. You go to www.ninite.com. That's N as in Nancy, I, another N as in Nancy, I, T as in Tom, E.com. And if you move through the items, you can move by headings also, and you will find an area that has antivirus, malware protection, similar things. And Microsoft Security Essentials is just labeled security, so you can press space to check that and then move to the button to get the installer. So it's a very simple process to get it, actually, thanks to the people at Nynite. So anyway, leaving my brief side trip into the area of resources, we are still in the settings area.
Run a scheduled scan on my PC, recommended, checkbox, checked.
And
scan type, drop down list, full scan.
Again, there is
when, drop down list.
More information about scanning and about the scheduling
around,
of that.
Drop down list, 7:00 p.m. Check for the latest virus and spyware definitions before running a scheduled scan. Checkbox, checked.
Again, these are several items involved
start the scheduled
in
scan. Limit CPU.
Configuring
limit CPU.
How the program
button.
Works. Okay, so I went through those.
Settings button.
And I'm back to the settings button. But just to remind you, when you tab through and you change all
list,
these.
Scheduled scan.
This is the scheduled scan option. This is a list. So you want a down arrow.
Real-time protection. 2 of 7.
And you're into the real-time protection option. So you should really go through each one of these. If you understand what it means, feel free to change it. If you don't, I would recommend, as they would say, not messing with success.
Scheduled scan.
So I'm going to Shift-Tab back.
Settings button.
To the settings button. Right arrow to move by tabs. Because, as I said, this is actually not a button. It is a tab, even though Microsoft calls it a button.
Help button.
Here is the help tab.
List, scheduled scan, settings button, help button, additional help option.
And I don't think it lists a whole lot.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
Okay, I think what that does, yes, it takes you to the web, and it's trying to do that. So.
Cancel button, alt, settings button, help button, additional help options button.
Additional help options.
Home button.
Again, there are just more ways to find help. And I'm back at the home tab or the home button. So now we're going to right arrow or control tab to get back to the history.
Update button. History button.
And this is the all important section as far as it concerns knowing if your system is infected. I'm going to just tab.
Quarantined items. Radio button. Selected. Items that were prevented from running but not removed from your PC.
Okay, and this is a list of the kind of items that you can show. You can show quarantined items.
Allowed items. Radio button. Selected. Items that you've allowed to run on your PC.
Items that you have allowed to run on your PC.
All detected items. Radio button. Selected. Items that were detected on your PC.
All detected items. Now, especially if you haven't allowed anything specific, I would go to this all detected items button. You don't have to press enter. You're just up and down arrowing. And once you're on that, press tab.
Home button. All detected items. Radio button. Selected. Items that were detected.
That's
home
very
button.
Different. Okay.
All detected items. Additional help options button. Help button. Settings button.
In the
history button. History.
Standard build of Microsoft Security Essentials that is out right now, tabbing again will take you back to the history button. I'm not certain why in the beta it takes you back to home.
All detected items. Radio. Home button.
But it does. So this is one of those times where you kind of ignore my wording, unless you're using the public beta. And I should say that I am recording this in December of 2011. So what is currently the public beta will not be, I would think, in the near future. So regardless of whether you come to a tab that says history or home, you can take a deep breath and let out a huge sigh of relief and you can relax because you don't have any viruses. If you are looking at this screen visually, what you would see is a chart or table, and it would list such things as the virus name and the recommended action. But if you cannot see it, and if there is no infection, the screen reader will skip right over it because there's really nothing to read. It's just blank. However, if you don't have just the history tab and then the list where you choose what type of information you want to display, if you tab again and you do come to additional information, you will want to take action to quarantine and, in all likelihood, remove those viruses. Hopefully, at some point in the near future, Microsoft will label these controls as tabs and not buttons. Until they do, I recommend that you share this information with your friends so that their PCs remain clean and so that they are not unwittingly sharing viruses with others. I also would recommend that regardless of what this is labeled, you regularly check in this area to make sure that you do not have an infection. And in a larger sense, there is one other lesson that I have learned from this experience. And that is that if I'm working with an unfamiliar program, I will do a control tab to see if there is any more information on the screen than what I am currently accessing. It just goes to show that sometimes what we see isn't all there really is. For Serotalk Podcast Network, I'm Lisa Salinger.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.